Okay, let's talk a bit about the financial environment. The financial environment deals with financial markets. And basically what we want to know here is what are financial markets, some of the characteristics of financial markets, and so forth. So first of all, make sure you understand what a financial market is. A financial market basically is a mechanism. That's probably the best terminology to use, because it's not necessarily a location or a tangible item, but it's a mechanism by which borrowers and lenders get together. So I'll put mechanism in borrowers and lenders. Now, borrowers need money, and lenders have a surplus of money. So they want to be able to get together so that we can match them up, so that the lenders can actually invest their money and the borrowers can use the money of those who have surpluses. Okay, just go through and make sure you understand some of the different types of markets. And again, I'm not going to cover all of them here to be brief, but the different types of markets include things like the money market versus the capital markets. And remember, the money market is the short-term market, whereas the capital markets is long-term markets, which means that short-term instruments are traded in the money markets, long-term instruments are traded in the capital markets. The primary market and the secondary market, remember, the primary market is the market for new issues of securities, whereas the secondary market is the market for issues of securities that already exist. And what that means is, in the primary market, the issuer actually receives the money. And if that issuer is a company, that means the company's out there raising money in the primary markets. Whereas in the secondary market, the transaction takes place between investors. So all we're doing is shifting money from one investor to another, and the original issuer, the company, for example, gets nothing out of that. Another thing you want to make sure you understand a bit about is market efficiency. And what we discuss very briefly in the chapter and in the lectures are three forms of market efficiency. A weak form, which it means that if the markets are what we call weak form efficient, then information from the past, stock price movements and stuff like that, are already impounded in stock prices. In other words, what that means is that the stock price, or they could be bonds or any other investment, the values of those already reflect information from the past. The second form is what we call semi-strong form. Semi-strong form includes publicly available information. So I'll just put public information here. And what that means is any, both past information and current information that is publicly available, is already reflected in the prices of these investments. And what that means is, if a new announcement came out from, let's say, earnings of IBM, then that information would be immediately impounded or reflected in the stock price of IBM, and people could not earn what we call an abnormal return. And then third is the strong form. The strong form of efficiency says all information is included or reflected in the prices of investments. And what that includes is not only publicly available information, but private or inside information. Now, these forms of efficiency basically say that if any one of these three is correct, then the investors can't earn what we refer to as abnormal returns. An abnormal return is defined as a return that is greater than risk dictates. So if you take a whole lot of risk, you should get a higher return. If you don't take much risk, you should get a lower return. If you're getting a very high return with not much risk, that would be considered an abnormal return. Or with a particular level of risk, let's say medium amount of risk, you're getting a much higher return than other people are with that same level, that's an abnormal return. And generally, the way people get abnormal returns, or think they can get abnormal returns, is by seeking out undervalued or stocks and other investments that are considered winners and will generate much higher returns than some others will. If we're strong form efficient, and all information is reflected in the prices, the current prices of stocks, that means you can't do that. You can't earn that normal returns because the prices already reflect all information, even information that's not publicly known. On the other hand, if we're semi-strong form efficient, if you had private information, you could earn abnormal returns, but everybody who has the same public information can't, because they all have the same information, which is already included in the prices of the investments. All right, also in this chapter, one of the things that you should be aware of and have some handle or indication of is investment banking. So go through and take a look at what investment banking entails. An investment banker, very simply, is an organization that specializes in issuing stocks and bonds, or helping firms and other organizations like governments raise funds by issuing particular securities like stocks and bonds. So make sure you understand how that works. And after I'm done with this particular page, I'll go through at least one problem that you had to work in this chapter, so you can get an indication as to how the problems work and why they actually do work. Okay, the second to last thing for this chapter is you ought to know about intermediaries. These are financial intermediaries. A financial intermediary, very simply, is an organization that, I guess the easiest way to say it, this is a general definition or description of a financial intermediary, is an organization that takes deposits and makes loans, or takes deposits in general. You know, an intermediary would include a bank, a credit union, mutual funds, and so on. They all take deposits. But more importantly, what intermediaries do is they take funds from investors, savers, which are investors, and they create products from those funds. Because if you think about it, when you put your money in a bank, the bank takes that money and creates loans and lends out to businesses and other individuals and so forth. So really, intermediaries help us to improve the standard of living in the United States by providing quite a few services. They help to reduce risk on our investments, because many of the organizations are federally insured, or they do a very good job, if nothing else, of investing, and they're professionals. They reduce the cost of us investing because we don't have to go out and seek all the information. And they really help us to diversify, if you think about it, because we can put our money in these intermediaries instead of going out and trying to spread it across a bunch of different stocks and bonds. Okay, and finally in this chapter, have some indication of international international markets. International financial markets. The international financial markets, or foreign financial markets, work quite differently than in the U.S. We're the oddballs. Actually, we do dominate, because the New York Stock Exchange, for example, is the largest financial market in the world, and so forth. But the way our markets work and our banks and so on work are much different. The ways ours work are much, much different than they are internationally. For example, if we talk about intermediaries around the world, in most cases, intermediaries in other countries are much larger, and there are fewer of them, fewer independent banks, for example, in other countries, major developed countries like the UK and Australia and India and so forth, than there are in the United States. The United States has thousands of independent banks, whereas in other countries it might be hundreds. And what that means is the banks in the United States really are generally smaller than most banks in most foreign banks, most large foreign banks. So if we go to Germany and the UK, for example, look at their top five banks, they are larger than banks in the United States. And much of the reason for that is because banks in the United States, or I should say financial intermediaries and financial markets in the U.S., have been heavily regulated up until the last 30 years was when deregulation has taken place. And we still have quite a few regulations to get over, but for the most part, we've been heavily regulated, whereas banks around the world have not. Okay, and what I'm going to do at this point is move on and work a problem that's similar to what you were assigned in this particular chapter. Let's review a problem that is similar to one of the ones that you were assigned from the textbook. In this particular problem, a company that we're calling ABC Corporation needs $95,000 to build a new distribution center. And the key here is that the company needs to walk away with $95,000 after all expenses are paid. In other words, after the flotation costs that its investment banker charges are paid. In this case, the flotation costs are 5%, And the first question, we're going to really go through a couple of situations here. The first question is, how much does the firm need to issue? In other words, how many shares of common stock does the firm need to issue so that it actually has $95,000 after the flotation costs are paid to the investment banker? Now, to start this, probably the easiest thing to do is to basically think about what the firm is going to get after its flotation costs. And really, the idea here is, I'll write it down as an equation, I'll call it the net proceeds from the issue that's going to be equal to the amount, and I'm going to abbreviate here, the amount of the issue minus the flotation costs. And I'm just going to call it cost in this case, just to, again, abbreviate a bit. And really what that means is, if you think about it, what this is going to be is the, and I'll change the term here just to issue amount to make it a little bit easier, a little bit simpler and straightforward here. It's the initial amount times, I'll write it out like this, 1 minus the percentage flotation cost, which is 0.05. In other words, the amount that the firm is going to net from the issue of the common stock is going to be 95% or 0.95 times the issue amount, because 5% of the amount has to be paid to the investment banker. Now, if we plug in the information that we know here, it's pretty simple, because in this case what we're saying is that the unknown amount is the amount issued. The net proceeds that the firm needs to build the distribution center is $95,000. So we plug in $95,000 on the left side, and we'll call this the issue amount. We'll continue to call this the initial amount, issue amount, excuse me. And you can see that really, you look at this equation that I have up here, the only unknown value that is left is the issue amount. And if we do some simple algebra here, what that means is that the issue amount is equal to the $95,000 that the firm needs, in this case, to build the distribution center, divided by 0.95. And if you work out that, you find out that the amount that needs to be issued is $100,000 of stock. Well, the question actually asks, in part A, asks how many shares of common stock needs to be issued. And in this case, the number of shares is pretty simple. We just take the total amount that the firm needs to raise, which is $100,000. Let me put a comma in here. And divide by the price per share, which is $40. And if you work that out, this comes out to be 2,500 shares. Now, of course, what you can do is you can work this backwards and take the 2,500 shares and multiply by the $40, and what you'll discover is that the result turns out to be $100,000. Okay, now the second portion of this problem asks, basically, if the firm does issue this amount, in other words, the $100,000, how much of that will be flotation cost, and how much of that will be the amount that the firm gets after it settles with the investment banker and pays the flotation costs? I'll use a different color here. And in this case, if the amount issued, let's see, I think we have enough space here at the bottom, the amount issue of the issue, and I'll just say the amount issued equals $100,000. Then if you look at what we're doing here, the flotation cost of this amount is going to be 5% of the $100,000 that is issued. That's how much is going to have to be paid to the investment banker. So that's 0.05 times the $100,000. That's $5,000. And if you put all this together here, that means the net proceeds to the firm, it's pretty simple, you can see it very clearly here, the net proceeds equal $95,000. The $100,000 that is the amount that is issued minus the $5,000 that must be paid to the investment banker. So in this case, you can see what happens is after the $100,000 of new stock is issued, the firm will be able to walk away with or net $95,000. Okay, before we complete this problem, I want to show you something that is a common error that many people make. In this case, I'll write it down, I'll remind you that the net proceeds that the firm needs is $95,000. So just label that net proceeds $95,000. A tendency often is to say, okay, if that's the case, if the flotation costs are 5%, then let's just put these, let's say the firm needs $95,000. Well, then that means the issue amount probably should be 5% higher than the $95,000. Well, if that's the case, that is the same as saying this, $95,000 times 1.05. And if we work that out, what that turns out to be is $99,750. In other words, if I take, I took 5%, 0.05, times 95,000, and said that should be the flotation cost, which is $4,750. So the total issue would need to be $99,750. But watch what happens if the firm issues this amount. Let me draw a line here, and we'll do this. The net proceeds then that the firm would receive from the issue of the common stock would be this. The firm would issue $99,750. And that would be minus the flotation costs, which would be 5% of $99,750. And let me do this very quickly. The flotation cost of $99,750, 5% of that, is $4,987.50. Well, if you subtract that from the $99,750, you end up with $94,762.50. Now remember, the firm needs $95,000 for its new distribution center. So really, the firm is short by, in this case, It's short by $237.50. If we did the computations the same as I did on this page. In other words, it's not correct to just add determine 5% of $95,000 and then add that to the $95,000 because in this case, the firm is going to be short a pretty good amount of money, in this case, over $200. And for that reason, that this is not the correct computation to determine how much the firm needs to issue to net $95,000.